You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Eden Orfanos-Shoro. Eden, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Brainerd.
So, Eden, you're talking to me from London, and let's talk about your art. I want to also talk about psychotherapy with you as a psychotherapist, but to begin with, let's talk about you as an artist. What's happening in your studio, or what are you working on at the moment, most recently?
Well, yeah, like you said, I am an art psychotherapist, and I find my work recently has really been more kind of response art, and by response, it can be to clients or something in the environment that I've witnessed, something political. Oftentimes my work is, I would say, largely political or something that has to do with the social aspects of what people deal with in life, whether it's of the body or in that way. Somehow it has to usually do with the body and what happens to us as humans in retaliation to what's happening in the world socially or via media or something like that. Does that make sense?
So let's talk about something very specific. So this is work that's largely figurative. Can you describe a little bit of the content of that? Because we're going to get into psychotherapy aspect, but I would imagine, the idea of response sounds intense, because I imagine you're dealing with a lot of heavy things. I mean, I suppose we all are in very many ways, but in terms of the specific work, is it canvases, and what kind of imagery is on it?
Yeah, when I do my own personal work, when I'm working on something of my own, it's largely paint on canvas, large, very large format. I like to work very big, which can be limiting sometimes, because I need a space to make a mess. And it is, as much as the aesthetic is important, it's almost the feeling of where I am with it. I like to kind of create an environment or situation that allows me kind of to tap into my own unconscious process. In the beginning, I don't really scrutinize on the aesthetic, but I kind of go with the feeling. It's more about the process than the product, but I might be, like I said, inspired or feeling resonance with something that's happened in the world, with the environment, maybe to do with human migration or feminist movements. Right now I'm working on a very large piece that's kind of it's kind of combining all that. It's a kind of a feminist piece on canvas, and it's a horse, which kind of represents the earth, the natural earth, and the chest is kind of exploded open. And on this horse is riding a woman with a thorn of crowns, and she's kind of, and stigmata is happening, and she's holding the earth, which is weeping and bleeding.
That's pretty intense. I'm glad we're talking about the specific imagery then, because that work is really has a number of elements to it, right? It's symbolic, it's mystical, and it seems to be kind of message oriented and even transformative. That's a bit of a maybe call to action isn't just the right word. It's a bit of a cry for help almost.
In a sense it is. I think most of my work has always kind of been that way, either if it was from kind of a collective consciousness, meaning something I was feeling from the earth or something, you know, from the world, or something I was feeling within myself. I always felt like art was my first form of communication. I say to people that my native language is art, you know. I've always worked through art, and with art and through art, utilizing my creative thinking and artistic abilities. My career has taken many, many shapes in that. I've been very fortunate, or I don't know, slightly mad in manifesting ways to support myself through artistic endeavors or creative endeavors. So, yeah.
And to talk about some of those creative endeavors, you create portraits of people. Is that one of the ways?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I have done a stint in my own photography. I worked for many, many years as a makeup artist and a makeup designer. And I was really fortunate in my career to have really spun the gamut with the makeup. I designed theater productions, which was really super exciting. So I got to do kind of wig design and makeup design in New York and in Los Angeles, and then in the film industry, everything from creating bullet holes and bloods to cadavers to, you know, working on cabaret off Broadway. You know, I got to do, like, you know, Berlin, and using the work of Otto Dix, kind of as my framework for how I kind of mapped the show and the characters in the show. But I have been doing art for a very long time, since I was really young, because I have really severe dyslexia. And so my way to express myself was really through images, because it really wasn't with language. So the nonverbal language was kind of where I felt very strong, and art kind of arose from that. And so I just kind of started drawing and creating my own little world, and then later realized, oh, I need to, you know, make a career. How can I translate this? And I always loved working with faces and portraits. And actually, I was raised in Texas, and I used to do portraits of people's horses at the rodeo and make a little money that way when I was like a kid. So it kind
painting,
of
painting off. Portraits of people's or photographs of
sketching,
their horses?
Sketching horses. Yeah, sketching their horses. Hmm. Yeah, just with a, you know, little, you know. And from that, I thought, well, you know, I don't know how I'm going to manage as a artist, quote unquote artist. So I got into the fashion industry and then started to do makeup, and I really loved it. And it was like, well, if I can create a 3D image on a canvas, what fun can I have with a 3D canvas, you know, a face or a body? So I started to do, you know, makeup in that way. And I've done special effects makeup, like I said, and beauty makeup, fashion. So that was really great. I did that for several years. And so that was kind of for someone else's work, but I did a bit of my own work as well, like creating different characters on myself and kind of exploring through that. And in fact, sometimes when I would go to a canvas, I would go through a process. My methodology was kind of, I put myself physically in a situation or an environment to kind of allow myself to be kind of a conduit for whatever art was coming through me. So I would like dress in quote unquote paint drag, or kind of dress as an animal or something shamanistic, or I'd actually prepare my physical body, which was almost as much as what was happening on the canvas. Like I'd put crazy makeup on, or put a wig on, or put some mad outfit on. So that was part of the process to kind of get myself into the channel of creating. Yeah. So that didn't answer your question.
I liked it. No, it did, because I wanted to know more of what you were doing. Back to the portraits, yeah.
Yeah, back to the photography. So in that background of makeup and working on Lion King and all this kind of stuff, I had this great, delicious skills of kind of transforming people into other things, you know. So then I thought, well, I'm going to just pick up a camera and start capturing this creativity. And so I would invite different people to come and kind of do this transcendental and transformative photography with me. And I would kind of I did a bit more shamanistic, kind of chose animal totems, and I would work with people. And largely I started working with women that had body dysmorphia. So the women had kind of, a disconnection.
And body dysmorphia, just to be clear, because I've talked with some people about body dysmorphia in interviews, and body dysmorphia is seeing your body and just correct me if I'm wrong, as very mm-hmm. different than it is. For example, seeing yourself as incredibly thin when you're not underweight, or seeing yourself as overweight when you're not overweight, or even more kind of unintended things, like I have these bumps in my arms that really aren't these huge bumps, but perceiving your body as something that it's not actually. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's right, Brainerd. Largely, these women that I were working with had also eating disorders, some type of bulimia or anorexia. So my goal was, through these photos, is to kind of get them more embodied. And we would use kind of animal totems or kind of animal figures or to kind of empower. So when they were, I would make them up with these kind of elaborate costumes, but more fashion than, say, like Lion King. It was more fashion oriented than say cartoonish, and just kind of through the preparation of them, kind of putting the feathers in their hair and coloring their skin and drawing on them and creating them into either wolves or sharks or some kind of creature that was kind of, and they felt empowered through that, and we'd work on that process. So the end result was them kind of feeling more appreciative of their body and seeing it through a lens that was a bit more artistic and not just like straight photography. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the series I called Animal Muse. And Yeah.
That's interesting. So that was in a sense a kind of reaction to this body condition as well?
I think so. I mean, I had in being in the fashion industry and in the industry of entertainment, I had witnessed so much disconnection with people's bodies, with their own bodies, you know, male and female. That their bodies were just like an external feature of themselves that they used for work, like modeling or acting or something like that. So it was really about kind of empowering the subject or the client, and, you know, kind of getting them more embodied and in tune with themselves, and having a nice aesthetic image in the end that they felt proud of or that they liked.
Right, yeah. So tell me a little bit about being a psychotherapist. I know you work with artists a lot, and I'd love to talk a little bit about that aspect of what you're doing as well. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm an art psychotherapist, which means that the language that we use is the art. It's actually the art. A session kind of would be, you would, you know, come in, we'd have some really simple and topical kind of conversation, just to make sure you're safe, and, you know, we've had some dialogue about, you know, how, what it means to be held and to be safe in the environment, and then you kind of start to create. It could be either something led, where I kind of give you an idea or framework to create in, or you kind of just allow yourself to flow. And the art is the language. The art is the emotional journal. So this is amazing for allowing people to access repressed traumas or unconscious memories, thoughts, things from their childhood, things that they're holding on to that they don't realize they are. Because if I say to you, you know, something, Brainerd, da 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 da, and then you think, oh, what did Eden say, and how am I going to respond to Eden to, so she understands I understood what she said, right? So the process is quite, it's a higher process, you know, verbal language. If you hand someone a crayon, you know, then, you know, everyone can create, you know, it's a much primal, more primal and more raw way of communicating, so it bypasses too much process and overthinking, right? And also, I find that art is always a level playing field. I have done a lot of humanitarian work and charity work in all over the world, and largely in Eastern Africa and Southeast Asia in disaster areas, whether it be disaster from a natural disaster or the effects of war. And so in this charity work, I always found that Actually, even in downtown Los Angeles, I worked with an organization called the Downtown Women's Center, and we went out to Skid Row and communicated with women that were living, you know, that were homeless living in Skid Row. But I always found that art was the level playing field for everyone. It bypasses, you know, socioeconomic standing, and it bypasses, obviously, language. It bypasses gender, race, age. It's just a neutral playing field that everyone can pick up a pen, a pencil, a crayon, a paintbrush, and make a mark. Everyone. Even if you have limited, if you have some kind of disability that's a physical disability, you still can create art. We call it art with a third hand, that through eye contact and small movements, you can create a narrative, what your narrative is.
All right, that's fascinating. So to talk just a moment about that then, since you're, I mean, that's a whole process, but you also have a lot of clients that actually are artists. Mm-hmm. Jump a little bit into kind of common struggles artists are dealing with, if there are any. Can you speak to that? Are there certain paradigms that artists tend to struggle with that you see practicing artists, like all the people that I interview, like yourself, like your clients? Are there things that that are common in terms of patterns or basic struggles?
I work with artists, all types of artists, musicians, choreographers, dancers, and visual artists. And again, I feel I have witnessed so much that people that are musicians and dancers and actors, they're so disconnected from their bodies in a way, that their body is something that they use for work, but to be like actually really connected to their body and to have love for their body is really rare. So to get them back to that place where they feel, you know, really connected to themselves and feel a soul, that's kind of the work we do. A lot of artists are, you know, they're insecure, and we, you know, I work on empowerment, and they, I think that a lot of people that are artists are drawn to art because it is a way of communicating. It is a way to tell your narrative. So some artists that I work with, they seek me out, obviously, as a psychotherapist. They do have a place where they want to explore and rediscover themselves and possibly uncover or release some type of trauma, or, like I said, some childhood thing that had happened to them, some childhood trauma or unresolved issue within themselves, or, you know, some type of guilt or something that's holding them back. So these are the kind of things that we kind of unpack in the sessions.
Very interesting. So before we go, I want to ask you one more question about your reading, but I feel like, is there anything else you wanted to say about that? You know, you have a lot of artists listening now. You have curators listening, a whole variety of people in the art world, and psychotherapy is something that I think everybody could use more of, perhaps. Is there anything you want to say about that process for the people who are listening now, and why it may be beneficial? I mean, obviously you're in London, but I'm talking about the process itself. For those that may or may not be familiar with it, is there something, speaking to artists in particular, that you feel they would benefit from psychotherapy? Could be specifically yours or in general.
I do want to mention that it's very interesting with when I work with visual artists, they really get quite I don't know if a shock is the right word, but oftentimes they are quite shocked when they go into this unconscious process. It's like free flow writing, or, you know, it's when they go into the process of making art with the concept of product, you know, not product, but process before product. It's very hard for them to let go of that artist where they want to see the aesthetic. But once they do that and they allow themselves to go into the unconscious process of making, so many things become discovered. It's so rich and very telling and very healing. But it is quite challenging for artists that, you know, make their living on art or represent themselves through their art making, to allow themselves to go into the process, not the product concept, and to allow and free up the emotions or the body or the somatic responses that are coming from within you to allow you to express something inside.
That's fascinating. Whereas with non-artists, accessing those things are a bit easier because they're not associated with tools of their career the way some of what you just mentioned is that what you're saying?
I don't think it's easier. I think the actual making the art within the session, as far as the art psychotherapy, them actually making the art is more challenging because it takes them a while to not expect a certain aesthetic from the work and to just allow yourself to flow and to release and allow self-discovery through the art as opposed to wanting an aesthetic at the end.
Very interesting, very interesting. So thank you so much. It was great talking to you about this. I want to ask you the last question, of course, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Yes, yeah, so I'm reading The Body Remembers by Babette Rothschild. It's about how the body holds trauma and manifests in the body. Yeah. So, yeah. It's with the therapeutic aspect with the art. It's more of an alchemy, I would say, with myself and the other person. It's a therapeutic alchemy more than an aesthetic that you're trying to create during a session.
Eden, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been fascinating talking to you.
Thank you so much, Bernard. It was great. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.